Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhikamastamavidivishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, page 120. The Krishna consciousness movement has started a Brahminical civilization, but especially when it is introduced in the Western countries, the Asuras try to impede it in many ways. Nonetheless, we must push forward this movement tolerantly for the benefit of human society. Right, so it's a Brahminical civilization. That's the religion that you're following, right? That's the religious platform. And then Krishna consciousness movement, then you includes then the philosophy that's there. So the philosophy, the practices, and the culture, that together then being for the purpose of understanding the Lord, therefore it's a Brahminical culture. It's not interested in liberation, it's interested in serving Krishna. And so, yeah, that's what you're dealing with. So now in trying to implement it, then you have to be very tolerant. Because many are not necessarily very interested. But either there are those who don't know about the Vedic culture and think it's strange, or those who do know about the Vedic culture and are trying their best to get rid of it. I think I'm not sure if the term used here is coconut. Coconut? You know coconut? No one knows coconut. You know coconut. Mm-hmm.
Is it like someone that feels like, you know, black, but they're actually...
Yeah, yeah. So coconuts aren't as dark. Let's say if it's in America, you call someone an Oreo. Because it's black outside and white inside. So coconuts, brown outside and white inside. So, therefore, then the idea is that those who are not opposed to the Vedic version, right, either they're innocent, and so they don't know, and so they're open to the idea. You know, may take more convincing, may not. They may be more intellectual, need more reasoning, or it may be more sentimental, but whatever, they're open to the point. They'll take it up. But those who are not innocent, whether they're actually from the Vedic or non-Vedic, they'll always oppose. Because the non-Vedic, then that's obvious, because here's a different culture, it has a whole different thing, and it's trying to get rid of materialism, right? Especially on the platform of karma. Then, or Gyan, if you're talking scientists. In the Vedic, then you have those who follow the culture itself, but it's not for the purpose of actually understanding Krishna. So they aren't interested in the Krishna conscious movement because they think that's not the actual purpose of the Vedic culture. The Vedic culture is either to get good material facility or liberate yourself. And so then you have people coming along and talking about bhakti that gets in the way of that process. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? And on both cases, they're very bodily conscious. So then the Western culture won't like Krishna conscious because it's from another culture, different bodies. And the Vedic won't like it because you have those that are not from India practicing it. So because of these bodily concepts and attachments, you know, to karma and jnana, whether it's they accept the Vedic principle or not, then they'll have a problem that's there opposed to it. Right? Because when we're talking here, Krishna consciousness is a Brahminical culture, it means it's the essence of the Vedic culture. Because the Vedic culture is Brahminical, but it accommodates the occupations of those who have occupational abilities that are not Brahminical. But the whole purpose of the society is Brahminical in that you're trying to understand the Supreme. So everybody in the Vedic culture is trying to become a devotee and understand transcendence. Does that make sense? That's the actual purpose. Mm-hmm. Kamsa's ministers concluded, Lord Krishna, the super soul within the core of everyone's heart, is the ultimate enemy of the suras and is therefore known as Asura Dvit. He is the leader of all the demigods because all the demigods, including Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, exist under his protection. Right? They know the philosophy very well, just their particular interpretation of the philosophy, that's the problem. Right? The great saintly persons, sages, and Vaishnavas also depend upon him. To persecute the Vaishnavas, therefore, is the only way to kill Vishnu. Right? But then if he's not in the heart, then what's going to happen? Right? You know. So then if he leaves the heart, then the heart implodes because there's a vacuum there. I don't think they're thinking ahead properly. Yeah. Right? So what we've seen is that the proper understanding of Krishna consciousness, proper practices and all those kind of things like that, you know, was there in the beginning of the Bhagavatam. You know, it's there throughout, but the emphasis is there. Then on the pure devotion, it's not about the rules and regulations that are recommended, it's about the purpose of the rules and regulations that are recommended. So it's not dropping the rules, it's just shifting the focus. Then into situations where it's not necessarily ideal, but still people can be Krishna conscious. And then we see here is the Asuras, they're talking very nice philosophy, but they're absolutely not favorably Krishna conscious. So it's what they're understanding, they're God conscious, they know the philosophy, but it's not favorable, so it's not in pursuance of pure devotional service. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the idea, is that it has to be in pursuance of pure devotional service. Otherwise, people may do things that are favorable to Krishna, be conscious of Krishna, right? But, you know, naturally not free from karma and jnana. But, you know, you still wouldn't call it mixed devotional service because it's not in pursuance of pure devotional service. Does that make sense? That's why bhakti mr. karma or bhakti mr. jnana aren't counted as devotional service, even though they may look the same. Because they're following bhakti because it's the most efficient way to get karma and jnana to give their fruit. Right? Because all fruit comes from it, by the nature of bhakti, by the grace of bhakti. Material nature doesn't produce anything itself. Right? So since the material nature is not producing, who's producing? That will be yogamaya, not mahamaya. Right? That's where the potency comes from. And yogamaya means then devotion. So you have to use that. Does that make sense? But if it's not in pursuance of pure devotion, it's not called mixed devotional service. It's just called karma jnana. Right? But the devotees, even though they may not be practicing pure devotional service, because the purpose is pure devotional service. That's the goal. That's the intent. Therefore, that mixed devotional service is called mixed devotional service. Right? So it's progressive. So it is counted as devotional service in a generic sense. Then we'll be more specific. Then it'll be karma yoga, jnana yoga, like this. Does that make sense? But on the mixed platform. Because on the pure platform, like Arjuna is doing fighting for Krishna, that's karma yoga, but it's on the platform of pure devotion. Does that make sense? It's not mixed. So the point is the form of karma yoga can be is advantageous because you can perform it even though it's mixed. You'll still advance until you come to the point where it's not mixed. Right? It's all based on the consciousness. Because the form is the same. That's why we recommend the Vedic form. That's what Prabhupada says. Krishna consciousness is charted a Brahminical civilization. Mm-hmm. So that means all the things that go along with the civilization. Because the civilization, then we'll say, then there's a social structure, an economic structure, judicial structure, religious structure. You know, all these different things will be there. Then we'll say it's a civilization. Right? Does that make sense? You know, when you have the you know, the different groups around the neighborhood that have their own little association and, you know, with their, and spray paint their names and colors on the wall, we don't call them a civilization. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So, that's the whole thing. The civilization has all these things where everybody can work together. So then civilization means all this, so the Vedic culture is what's used. That's the Brahminical civilization. But we make the emphasis that is Brahminical means, so when we talk about Vedic or Varnashram, we mean the Brahminical cultural aspect of it, not the aspect of karma and jnana. So we're not talking about dharma, artha, karma, and moksha. We're talking about bhakti. And because you follow the culture, all the benefits of dharma, artha, karma, and moksha are already included. Right? But the point is it's Brahminical, it's only about Brahman. We're only trying to understand Krishna and how he is, how his three features then are, you know, the sum total of everything. And then depending on which aspect we're working with that aspect of Krishna. But it's Krishna, the person, who has come as Brahman and Paramatma. Does that make sense? So like that. So then in here, then we see those who are talking, as we said, talking proper philosophy. And in their own way, proper conclusions, up to a point. Right? This is Siddhanta that they're talking, but they're not interested in using it for Krishna consciousness. So now this is not in any way to be, you know, used. It means what they're talking, this philosophy that's correct, we can use that understanding. But their conclusion, how they apply it, that's not used. We can't say, oh, but they're talking nice philosophy, so we can do what they're doing. You know what I'm saying? No. That's what we're trying to get. So then you see, because if you can't catch this, how you catch the difference in the flavors of devotional service, which are even more subtle. If something as subtle as this we can't catch, how are you going to tell the difference between Vaikuntha and Braj? You know, or Dwarka, how it's in between. Or the different flavors of the rasas, or who's doing what. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing. Otherwise, by Aropia, we'll project our own attachments onto these residents of the spiritual world, and I don't think that they'll appreciate that. Right? Because they are who they are, because of their love for Krishna. They have what they do. We shouldn't then, through mental speculation, throw out doubts. Well, maybe it could be. You know, they don't do this. But maybe they could. It doesn't say they don't. Right? We've heard this? Mm-hmm. What philosophy is this?
James.
It's James. This is Syadvan. Maybe. Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's true. Maybe it's not. Maybe it could be like this. Maybe it's not. So all it is another way to mental speculate. By breaking down the authority. You say, no, Shastra says this. No, but maybe, what's the whole point of that? To break down that authority that Shastra, this is the conclusion. So that I can speculate and maintain my own attachments. You understand? That's what's working here. We have to be very, very careful that we understand the Bhagavatam as it's given by the Acharyas. Then it comes out very nice. Then we can differentiate these things very, very nicely.
Uh-huh.
Yes?
You say that Madhya Madhikari must discriminate and avoid the demon.
Yes.
So here we are trying to understand what they are saying and the mood behind.
Yes. Well, here it's that they're giving nice philosophy. Right? So in other words, that all these different things go together and Lord, and Krishna is very pleased by all these things. Great saintly persons, sages, Vaishnavas depend upon him. These are all true. But they're using it in the negative. You know, it's just like sometimes you see is, but you take out what's the positive aspect. So we'll apply it like this. Just like, let's say, if we say, one should not blaspheme the devotees who are, you know, dedicating their life to, you know, preaching the glories of the holy name. Okay? So that's what we shouldn't do. What should we do? Glorify those who are, you know, respect those who are glorifying the holy name, who have committed this out like that. You understand? Follow their example. That's what, you understand? So all it is here is that the glorification of the Lord is just given in a negative way. That's why it's left here. So, and technically, they're glorifying the Lord, but at the same time, as they're presenting it in such a way that it's not. Because right? They don't have the you know, qualifications to understand. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like that. So then we take that aspect. Mm-hmm. But we know what the standard is, what's the example, and then we follow that. Mm-hmm. So that's how we can discriminate. Otherwise, you take too many things from here and there, and then it ends up in a bit of a hodgepodge. The Asuras perpetually struggle to persecute the Vaishnavas because they do not want Vaishnavism to spread. Vaishnavas preach only devotional service, not encouraging karmis, jnanis, and yogis, because if one must liberate oneself from material conditional life, one must ultimately become a Vaishnava, right? Because that's how it'll happen, because the point is the karmis, jnanis, and yogis, which covers everything. Right, because in karma you can have those who they're not into pious work, they're into doing nothing or impious work. Mm-hmm. Right, so that'll include also the atheistic, all that. They're all karmis. Mm-hmm. Right, yogis, we're bringing them out here because of the method that they use. But at the same time, is generally they'll fit into one or the other of the categories also. The first six levels will be into karma, the last two into jnana. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. But what's their purpose of that? Mostly it's karma, because they want Mystic City. It's just subtle karma. That's all. Mm-hmm. But if we're being thorough, we mention all three. So if we mention all three, it means there's nothing outside of that. Mm-hmm. So for the Asuras, they always are supporting the karmic jnanis and yogis to whatever flavor that they prefer. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? Some materialists like yoga, some don't like yoga. You know, some like intellectual, some don't. Some like fruit of endeavor, some don't. You know, it's just like, you know, the corporate, you know, world and this and that is destroying, and they don't like the karmi mm-hmm. aspect. Though they're karmis, but, you know, you understand? So they have their, each individual has their particular like and dislike or combination of these. But it's always going to come back to these three. So, therefore, since this covers everything that goes on in the material world, and doing things in the material world keep you in the material world, then to get out of the material world, what do you have to do? Something that's not these three. And the only thing that's not these three is bhakti. That's the whole idea. So, only the devotees actually can liberate themselves from the material world. The jnanis may temporarily, or the yogis may temporarily, but they'll come back. Right? So that's the difficulty. But for the bhaktas, they won't come back. So it's the only method. So therefore, since people who are attached to the material world, attached to the concept of I and mine, or I'm the controller and enjoyer, then they're not going to like devotional service because it's directly opposed to. You may be doing the same activity, but the result is going to be the opposite, because instead of being for your pleasure, it's for Krishna's pleasure. So they don't like that. Right? Because they want it for their pleasure. So even if they do, are able to accommodate the cultural aspects that are practiced, they won't appreciate the purpose of it. Does that make sense? Yeah, because so many times people can appreciate or integrate into their life some cultural aspects that they get from somewhere else. Like I remember as a kid once, was there and like saw the neighbors, they had a whole bunch of books, old books and stuff like that, and they had garbage, you know, they cleaned out their garage basically in the house, so I guess it was spring cleaning. And so then, you know, what's the common standard thing for many people, especially if you have some land and all that, is if you want to get rid of garbage, what do you do with it? You burn it. Right? So then, you know, they're burning all the garbage, and then they were getting the books, they were going to throw them in the fire. And I said, no, you shouldn't burn books, because books are what you get knowledge from. If you don't need them anymore, then out of respect, you should bury them. And I had picked that up from some culture somewhere, this and that. And so then, you know, and they all, oh yeah, wow, cool. So they buried, you know, then they dug a hole, buried the books, and did the whole thing, right? Does that make sense? So the whole idea is that we may integrate different things from different cultures around the world. You know, this one from Japan, this one from China, this one from India. There's so many different places we pick up something. You know, like it takes a whole village to raise a child, right? That's from Africa. right? And so that saying ad like that. So people integrate all these different things in their lives. But what's the point of it all? Sense gratification or liberation, right? So as long as that's there, then they don't mind all these far out things, right? So that's the whole point, is by following our culture, even in a very nice, refined way, people will be attracted by that. That looks far out, because they like integrating these things. Now the trick comes is explaining that in connection with Krishna consciousness. So you've caught their attention by the culture, then you explain the actual point of culture, Krishna consciousness. But if you don't use the culture, then why will they be attracted? Right? Does that make sense? Okay.
Loudly? Attention to underline
that
here Prabhupada says that therefore the asuras always tries to suppress it.
Yes.
And nowadays this is not very popular. So nowadays it's more clear that there are many obstacles. There's something more difficult that this person doesn't want you to do it. But
how difficult is having a job and maintaining a job? Right, and then what about family life and kids? I mean, come on, you don't get much more difficult than that. So then, is it Krishna telling you something? You just go find a hole and crawl into it and just wait there until you die. Right? That's easy. Now, would that be hard? No, that's easy. You know, so yes, you can use all these things to support your own attachments, but you have to see is that. What is it your duty? If it's your duty and there's obstacles, then you have to do it. If it's not your duty and you're doing it, you're getting obstacles, then that's obvious, no, you shouldn't be doing that. But you have to be careful that it's, how do you judge whether it is an obstacle or whether it's Krishna trying to tell you something? Is by the standards given in the scriptures, what's in the Brahminical culture. Because you're going by the external, so what does the culture say about that? Because the culture deals with the external. Then, even though you are doing the right thing, you are doing like that, then maybe there's something else Krishna is trying to tell you. Just because there's an obstacle doesn't mean he's saying stop. Maybe he's saying give up attachment. Or behave nicely. Or, you know, have the right, you know, do it for Krishna. You understand? So why is it automatically? And if we interpret it, it'll be Krishna doesn't want it, so therefore we have to follow what would be the Western standard of interpreting it. Why that? Why not something else? Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, why not? Oh, I'm having difficulty in this thing and trying to make money. So maybe Krishna's telling me I shouldn't keep money, so I should take all my possessions, all my money, and give it away in charity. Why don't we come up with that as an alternative solution or interpretation? We're not about to do that. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that we interpret it according to our own mundane values. But that's why the Vedic system's there, so we can interpret it according to the Vedic system. Does that make sense? Our Krishna conscious movement is directed with this understanding, and therefore the asuras always try to suppress it. Right? So that's the thing. We're trying to establish Krishna consciousness. That's why they will always suppress it. So just that they're trying to suppress, that means then we're being Krishna conscious. If they're not trying to suppress, that means we're not being Krishna conscious. Because there's nothing to suppress. You know what I'm saying? Could also, how about that as an interpretation? So just fitting in means, yeah, no Krishna conscience. Why won't you fit in? You know? But in that fitting in, will you be happy? No, you fit in before you weren't happy. That's why you joined Krishna consciousness. Because if fitting in was so great, you would have been in ecstasy before. But you weren't. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, the adherents of Kamsa were all influenced by the mode of passion, as well as illusion by the mode of ignorance. And their only business was to create enmity with saintly persons. Such activities can only reduce one's duration of life. Like you see, how are these demons so powerful that the demigods are afraid of them? right? By performing proper piety and all that, right? But now, by performing impiety, you'll reduce that. And then if you harass the saintly persons, then it takes it down really quickly. So even though you would be normally, you burn it, you know how you say, you're burning the karma by its application. You know, it's just like you have money, you spend it, it goes down, you know, in its natural, gradual way. You gamble, it can disappear in just one moment. Does that make sense? So in here, as they have this, as they use their power, it will reduce their power. They'll have to continue doing austerities to maintain it. But if they harass the saintly persons, then it will just disappear. So they shorten their whole life. So instead of living however long thousands of years they would have normally lived, then they'll end up living shorter. Like, you know, how you say, Dvidvita is here, but Dvidvita goes back a long ways. He's not just a new guy on the block. You know, so then it goes down. So, you know, even though he's living for, I think, thousands and thousands or even millions of years, but then because of harassing the devotees, then, you know, all that shortened very quickly. So all these demons, you see that their life will be shortened drastically because of harassing the devotees. Does that make sense? You know, because what can they do to harass Krishna? But they've come to Vrindavan, they harass the devotees, therefore then they're killed. Right? So, yeah. The demons accelerated the process and invited their deaths as soon as possible. The result of persecuting saintly persons is not only The result of persecuting saintly persons is not only untimely death. The act is so offensive that the perpetrator also gradually loses his beauty, his fame, and his religious principles. Right? Because they're maintaining it by religious principles. Right? You're doing austerity, it's still religious principles. But the purpose of those religious principles is to maintain their particular material thing that they have. Right? The particular material facility. So that means they all have, everybody to get anything of benefit has to follow religious principles. That's just how the material world works. But once you get it, what your purpose is, that's another thing. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's it. Person gives in charity. So he's reducing his money. But he's following a religious principle. But by giving to a good charity and this and that and all that, then people, then one from that, then he'll get that money back. Right? But at the same time, by giving charity, then other people in the society think he's a charitable person, he's a nice guy, so then they start to interact with him, then business increases. You understand? But he has to keep doing these things. Does that make sense? But his purpose is just to make more money. Right? So, like that, you can use any of these religious principles for mundane purpose. They're meant for devotional service. That's the Vedic culture is meant for that. That's why it's called Brahminical culture or Sanatana Dharma. But when it's not used, then it's for material purposes. That's all people want from it. Does that make sense? So we have to understand is that religious principles are the only way to get material facility. Right? But all that material facility is useless unless it's connected to the Lord. And used in devotional service. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, we don't say, oh, but these demons are following religious principles, throw it out. No, it's a matter of they're following it and using it for bad purposes. Others are following it and using it for Krishna consciousness. So you have those who are following for sinful purposes, those who are following for pious purposes, those who are following for liberation, those who are following for devotional service. But to get any facility, the only way is through religious principles, proper performance of your duties. Right? So that's why it says, perpetrator also gradually loses beauty, fame, and his religious principles, and thus his promotion to higher planets is checked. Driven by various kinds of mental concoctions, the demons diminish all kinds of auspiciousness. So anything that's auspicious, they tend to reduce it. Because if the auspiciousness is good for them, they'll promote it. but if it gets in the way of them, their profit, they will reduce it. An offense at the lotus feet of the devotees and brahmanas is a greater offense than that committed at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A civilization that commits such sinful activities generally loses all faith in the Supreme Lord. And such a godless civilization becomes the source of all calamities in human society. Because of that, then they lose their... Because one of the points of all these things is you appreciate the Lord. If nothing else, just as the one who controls everything is the lawmaker, so if you follow the laws, everything goes good, right? You know, it's just, you're in the country, you follow the laws of the land, things go better for you. You work in a business concern, you follow the rules, it works better for you. So God, this is His place, you follow the rules, it works better for you. Right? But when they go against the things that are actually the purpose, then God removes that understanding, and so then they less and less follow these things, so they get less and less facility. So, okay. Sugriva Goswami continued, thus having considered the instructions of his bad ministers, Kamsa was bound by the laws of Yamaraj and devoid of good intelligence because he was a demon, decided to persecute the saintly persons, the brahmanas, as the only way to achieve his own good fortune. Right? They could have just gone out and sent out his spies to look around and find out, what's going on, what's the name. He could just keep his eye out. That would be the way of following it within his dharma. Right? But he's not. He's following it outside of dharma. Srila Prabhupada comments, Sri Lochan Das Thakur has sung, Apana Karama Bunjaye Samana Kahaye Lochana Das. Instead of taking good instructions from the sages and the shastras, godless non-devotees ask whimsically according to their own plans. Actually, however, no one has his own plans because everyone is bound by the laws of nature and must act according to his tendency in material conditional life. Right? So that's Maya's trick. She is controlling everything, and then it's arranged in such a way that you think, I have my own plan. It's just the modes of nature come up with it. When the modes change, everybody's plan changes, how they view things. Right? Does that make sense? That's how it's going to work. Everything's going along, everyone's wearing very bland clothing. Like that. Let's say like in the 50s. Very, very bland. And then somehow in the 60s, the modes adjust, then bright colors and wild stuff like that. And then it goes down again. And a few years back, everyone wore black. You know? And that, and then a little color comes, and now there's quite color. You know, it'll just, it's the modes of nature. People think, oh, it's us and the fashion. Okay. It's just the modes of nature. And then it comes up, somebody is the one who leads it, and it all happens, and then it changes. So it appears that we're independent and doing whatever we like, but just the modes of nature take us through. Like that. You can make your choice, but once you make the choice, then the modes of nature carry it out. Does that make sense? Just like you go to dinner, you make an order. Do you cook the dinner? No, someone else cooks it, but based on your order. You made a decision, then it happens. Then when they show up at the table with what you ordered, if you say, what's this? You know, they say, this is what you ordered. You know, but well, you know, where's our free will? You know, is it all predestiny? I'm forced to accept this thing just because in the past it... What would you think of that guy? Yeah. You, the two tall guys over in the corner, you know, tall, stocky guys in the corner in the suits that got those little things in their ear and look really sober, they'd call them over, right? And so then, like that. That's the whole thing, is that we make the choice, but then it happens, the modes of nature do it, but we think, I'm doing this. You know, that's the whole idea. Yes. A little louder.
Yeah, when you speak about godless non-devotees,
is the wind blowing? Because they have the airplane sound now. There's some wind blowing in the back. Poor loud, yes.
Acting whimsically.
Acting whimsically.
Would it be correct to say that acting whimsically also means not accepting the Vedic religion at large. For example, there are devotees for devotees.
Devotees who are devotees. There are devotees who are devotees.
And you're asking them, do you live in Krishna? They say, yes.
Yes.
I want Krishna prayer. But, for example, acting whimsically according to your plan, your own plan, this is another side. Because then when this becomes really complicated, because, for example, if you say that, for example, even if we take astrology, that Srila Prabhupada said that, of course, devotees are devotees. But still, if you know that it's going to rain, better to carry an umbrella.
Right.
Right. So astrology and Ayurveda also.
Because it just tells situations. Yes. All it does is explain situations. But what you do with them, that makes the devotee.
Yes. So Ayurveda also. The science works under the doshas, everything. And then if you do something wrong with it, your day, your food, and yoga also, the exercises, the breathing, the everything is working according to the nature's plan. The devotees. Right. For acting whimsically, we can say that they are acting against or being ignorant of actually the laws of nature. So can we actually categorize it as godless devotees?
No. See, we don't take things that far just because there's a similarity. Okay, like your sari has some red in it and all that, and on the wall over there it's made of bricks, it's red, so you're wearing a brick sari. Would we want to do that?
No.
Okay, or I can build this building out of sari. Right? You know, so one sari takes up so much space, much more than a brick, you know, so it'd be very efficient. You understand? So the point is means influenced by their conditioning that may come from a background of godless civilization. That's why there's that aspect. But they're devotees because they have faith in Krishna. They have faith in that ultimate goal of developing love for Krishna. But due to their conditioning, they may act, you know, in ways that are not ideal. So that itself is an anartha, and to hold on to that is an anartha. That's why the tenth offense, to maintain material attachment. It's not that you have. Sometimes, you have a material attachment, that's the tenth offense. No. Maintaining the material attachment, like saying, we're Westerners, we can't do this. That's maintaining material attachments. That's the tenth offense. But having an attachment, that's not the tenth offense. Because the attachment's there, you're getting rid of it by the process. You know what I'm saying? Just like Prabhupada makes the comment that someone who's in the shower, I mean someone who's obviously dirty, and they're in the shower to take a bath, and then you're standing outside and criticizing that they're dirty, what's the point? They're in the process. But if they scrub everything except their elbow, and you say, what about the elbow? No, I like my elbow being dirty. What's the problem? You got a problem with that? You know. Why does everybody care about it? Why can't, you know, why is my decision, it's my elbow? Why, you know, so then they make a whole thing out of it. Then you'd say, then now we're talking about attachment. Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is that, yes, the influence of the demoniac civilization is there. But that doesn't mean that that's their intent or purpose. So they may be burdened by it. So by good association, then they will give up that mentality and accept the practices that are favorable to progress. But if one stubbornly holds on to these attachments and demands them, and it's your right, and it says, yes, you want to be you want to do this thing, then that's great. But, you know, generally we don't. You know, when you say a chandala can become a Vaishnava, they give up the chandala culture. They don't say, hey, I'm a chandala, I'm sticking to, you know, dog meat here. Does that make sense? And how you say, and I especially like the, how you say the cute and cuddly dogs? You know what I'm saying? It's just, you don't do that. It's that you give up that culture. They may not have necessarily accepted a specific position in the Vedic, but they give up the sinful life of the chandala. So socially, they're still in that category as a chandala, but now they're practicing devotional service. They're not attached to it. Attachment's always a problem, unless it's to Krishna. Even you're attached to something so wonderful, it's still attachment. That's the thing. You know, so if you're attached to your septic lifestyle and everything's very nice and beautiful, and that it's still going to keep you in the material world. You know, then You know what I'm saying?
The scary part comes when they actually make, for example, I can speak from outside, but when you are acting musically, you're acting according to your own plan for sure, and then you're making out a philosophy about it, and then actually, you get lost in that. But as you said, that if you're considering the fact that you're progressing.
That's the point. Is they're progressing, then so that they may rationalize now and again in their kind of understanding, but they're not preaching it. Then they'll still progress. It'll be slower. But now, if they make up this and now to for their own status to preach it, and so that they don't look bad, because the other person, everybody knows they're attached, though they've given some reason for it, and you know people may leave them alone, but they don't feel so socially, you know, how you say, well situated. You make a philosophy to make your attachment look like it's good. In other words, you take something wrong, try to make it look like right. That's the mode of ignorance. It's going to have a very bad effect. You know what I'm saying? Because mode of ignorance, professing mode of ignorance, can't be progressive. You can't say, no, but it doesn't matter. It's this or that, or we're just the soul. But then why don't you just drop it? If you're just the soul, then why do you care about it? Okay? You take what's the conditioning, what's required, that's there. But you can't say that, okay, we're Westerners, we're used to eating wheat, not rice. But a huge amount of India eats wheat, not rice. Basically only south, east, and north, very far north, like Kashmir, they eat rice. Everybody else eats wheat. You know what I'm saying? So there's no, but I have to, you know, we're Westerners, we have to eat like that. Oh, but I want to eat lots of vegetables. Like, they don't eat vegetables here? You know, it's like everything's a vegetable here. You know, I mean, what are the vegetables in the West? You know, it's a handful of them. But here, everything's a vegetable. That banana tree over there is a vegetable. You know what I'm saying? The coconut tree there, there's a thing when they first come out with the thing, then that part is taken. It kills the tree. That's why only very exclusive restaurants do it, use it. You know what I'm saying? But the point is that everything's a vegetable. Especially, you know, in East India. So that's the thing, is that we can't, then we maintain our attachments. You know what I'm saying? Because that's the difference. So all we're saying is, I'm attached to these things, that's why I prefer them. Not that, oh, I need these things. You can't say that. That's stupid. Actually, however, no one has his own plans, because everyone is bound by the laws of nature and must act according to his tendency in material conditional life. Therefore, one must change one's own decision and follow the decision of Krishna and Krishna's devotees. That's the whole point. Then one is rescued from punishment by Yamaraj. Kamsa was not uneducated. It appears from his talk with Vasudeva and Devaki that he knew all about the laws of nature, but because of his association with bad ministers, he could not make a clear decision about his welfare. Right? So he's educated, but he had bad association. So that's the point. Good association is very important, because then whatever you have, lack of education or education, you can use it for Krishna. You're uneducated, you'll become educated. You're educated, you can use it for Krishna. But here, he's educated, but he can't use it properly because of bad association. Right? So one must change one's own decision to follow the decision of Krishna and devotees. How do you do that? By associating with those who have that understanding. Right? By reading the scriptures, then it's spoken by the Lord, spoken by the devotees. By following what the acharyas say, by associating with devotees that we consider more advanced, all this will make for us to change one's own decision. Right? So that's the whole thing. So therefore, that's then the what brings everything together. That synthesizes it. Right? Then we'll be able to do one is then one is rescued from all this. Then one actually comes to that position. Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea.
You can have always constant good association.
Yes, we can always have constant. You know, just in other words, if we're contemplating, then we're going to get. Yes. Because if you don't contemplate, if you're not contemplating, how will Krishna reciprocate for you getting understanding? Mm-hmm. Understanding comes from thinking. If you're not thinking, how do you get understanding? In a sense, so that's the process we do. The heart may become purified so that by the process of devotional service. So when you do contemplate, then it goes very nicely. Like I've seen sometimes devotees, they don't study much, but they're very nicely engaged in service, you know, really fully engaged. And then they'll come and they'll hear stuff. You see them move through the process of realization very quickly. You know, up to the point of how much kind of service they've done. And then that's it. They stop, go back. You know, because that's all the farther they can absorb. Right? So the whole idea is that by good association, then you're going to be able to understand what should be done and not be done, and then make the correct decision. Because material qualification isn't enough. Kamsa was materially qualified. Otherwise, how is he running the kingdom that Ugrasena can run? Right? We know Ugrasena is qualified. Now, when he's running it, we don't hear that as a kingdom it's not running well. We know he's persecuting, he's doing this and that, specific groups. But otherwise, we don't hear that managerially is falling apart and people are revolting, this, that, and all that. It's not happening. So he knows, he's educated, he's qualified materially, but by bad association, he makes the wrong decision. So if we associate with those who are more advanced, then we can make the proper decision, because that's what you're trying to do. Therefore, one must change one's own decision and follow the decision of Krishna and Krishna's devotees. That's what you want to do. So all this knowledge, all this philosophy, all this culture is so that we change our own decision. So we're not professing the Vedic culture because, you know, the decision is about following that. No, the decision is about pleasing Krishna. Pleasing Krishna is the results of our activities. The results of activities comes from activity itself. Activity itself comes from proper knowledge and understanding. So therefore, what knowledge and understanding should be performed? Right? I have modern knowledge, modern identity, I perform an activity, it'll be a modern activity that will give a modern result. Now, how do I connect that to Krishna? That's the whole point. And I can only connect it there, because everything else I can't say how it's connected. But if using the Vedic version, the identity I can connect, the knowledge I can connect, because it comes from Krishna, the activity is being done to please Krishna. Right? And it's according to what it says. It will give a result that's also stated. And that result then is what pleases Krishna. So I know that I can please Krishna with these things. Therefore, then I can work that way. Understand? So that's why it's recommended. So we're not professing the Vedic culture because it on its own is as an advantage. We're professing because it's an advantage to using Krishna's service. Right? And since people are looking for a freedom from material distress and material happiness, it already includes that. It's the best way to get it. So it's a side benefit for the material desires that people maintain. But that's not our purpose. So it's not that, oh, we follow Vedic culture, then we'll be happy. No, because there's, you know, millions of people follow Vedic culture, and they're still not Krishna conscious. Right? So that's not our point. Okay. Yeah. Giving information and giving association.
So sometimes, for example, many times I have a friend particularly who's has a domain qualification, and when she gives advice according to bona fide, like Krishna conscious way, Krishna conscious system, and she sees that the devotees don't follow, and then she sees the consequences of why, how they didn't follow this, and then she gets upset very badly, and we were discussing how to make it more efficient, because devotees get the knowledge, the information, but they don't apply it, like you said, because of lack of association. So can we define association as for yourself, method of instruction, as this is association, the method that we get to this association?
Yes, that's association. But the point is the confidential discussions will be according to what someone can digest.
Yeah, more loving exchange. That's why it's like with association, you mean that, like that kind of personal fears and
whatever is appropriate. You don't take it over the top. That is personal care, and therefore, because that's the modern kind of concept, therefore we overemphasize that, and everybody has to care. And this, yeah, and you understand? So you have to be careful about that. The point is they've done their duty. They've told others. They don't follow. They're not the controller. And they're not the friend of everyone. Krishna is. Right? And they're not the enjoyer. So therefore, then, if you can't have influence, then don't, why get worried about it? You do your duties. You please Krishna. It's the time factor. They're thinking, no, it should happen now. But who's in control of time? Not us. So it's going to happen when it happens. But people want to maintain attachment for these mundane things. And so Krishna lets them. It's not that they don't get harassed in the process.
Yes.
Right? But the point is they want that. So Krishna gives that to them. So then at one point, they'll understand that this doesn't give anything. And then they'll be able to take what works.
So sometimes a circumstance can be so drastic. Like there's a person standing on the same, the train is going, and you're saying move out, and then he doesn't, and then gets smashed, and then you're feeling that if I could just run out to him and just drag him away from the thing.
The point is then you have to see what's there, what are your duties. You know, if you can see that, yes, you pull the person out, but if you're not there, you can't do anything. You know what I'm saying? The persons have to make their own decision. It's not that, oh, I wasn't in control. Because we're not the controller. So that's the thing. Is because I said it, people should do it. Why should they do it because you said it? Who are you? Oh, it's the Vedic verse. So then they should do it because it's the Vedas. Not because of you. Do you understand? That's the whole thing. Is that as soon as you include yourself in it, then you get so disturbed. But the point is we're not. You know, you may try to then figure out better ways to explain it so that people do take it. But that's then service you can do for Krishna. But we're not in control of the results. That's not us. Is that clear? Sukadeva Goswami continued. These demons, the followers of Kamsa, were expert at persecuting others, especially the Vaishnavas, right? So everyone has their expertise, right? So that's why they recommended that, because they, you know, naturally an expert will talk in their own field, right? You know, someone's into ecology, all the problems are ecology. If someone's into economics, all the problems are economics. If someone's political, all the problems are political. If someone's religious, like that. So they're expert at persecuting others, especially Vaishnavas, so that was their recommendation. Right? Yeah. And they could assume any form they desired. So they had to have a lot of piety to do that. But we see, because of persecuting others and the Vaishnavas, then all that piety was finished, and then Krishna killed them all. After giving these demons permission to go everywhere and persecute the saintly persons, Kamsa enters his palace. Surcharged with passion and ignorance, and not knowing what was good or bad for them, the Asuras, for whom impending death was awaiting, began the persecution of the saintly persons. Srila Prabhupada comments. But you'll see in here, sometimes it says Prabhupada comments, and sometimes then it comments in the Krishna book. Because up to through the 13th chapter, Prabhupada has his purports in the 10th canto, but he has the Krishna book. So for the first 13, we may get from both, if there's, you know, some difference. But from the 14th, then we'll only get the Krishna book. Irresponsible persons, surcharged with passion and ignorance, foolishly do things that are not to be done. Nunam paramatta kurute vikarma. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.4. But one should know the results of irresponsible actions, as explained in the next verse. Right? You can do whatever you want, but since you're not in control, the modes of nature are, then and it works on a mechanical system, you know, of karma, then whatever you do, you will get the results of that. Not that I want to do this, but I want that result. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't work like that. Sukadeva Goswami concluded, my dear king, when a man persecutes great souls, all his benedictions of longevity, beauty, fame, religion, blessings, and promotion to higher planets will be destroyed. Not maybe, will. It's just that's how it works. That's the system. So then a conclusion of the chapter. Pratidya, when a man persecutes great souls, all his benedictions of longevity, beauty, fame, religion, blessings, and promotion to higher planets will be destroyed. Hetu, because an offense at the lotus feet of the devotees and brahmanas is a greater offense than that committed at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? Because Krishna may tolerate. He's in the heart. You're doing things you shouldn't be doing. It's not necessarily that, you know, it goes so badly so quickly. Because he's tolerant. He's sitting in your heart. He goes through anything. But he doesn't want that for the devotees and the brahmins and the cows like this. So therefore, when you persecute them, that's why then things are, you know, considered worse. Udaharna. Especially in this age, Kali Yuga, cows are being killed all over the world. And as soon as there's a movement to establish Brahminical civilization, people in general rebel. Thus they regard the Krishna conscious movement as a form of brainwashing. How can such envious persons be happy in their godless civilization? When Krishna comes to establish real perfection in the social order, he personally gives protection to the cows and brahmanas. This is his first interest, because without protection, of brahmanas and the cows, there can be no human civilization and no question of happy, peaceful life. A civilization that commits such sinful activities generally loses all faith in the Supreme Lord, and such a godless civilization becomes the source of all calamities in human society. The result of persecuting saintly persons is not only untimely death. The act is so offensive that the perpetrator also gradually loses his beauty, fame, religious principles, and thus his promotion to higher planets is checked. Krishna Book 40-41. Nigamana. The Supreme Personality of Godhead punishes them by keeping them in darkness, birth after birth, and pushing them lower and lower into wretched conditions of hellish light. Okay. Chapter 5. The Meeting of Nanda Maharaj and Vasudeva. Pratigya. When we consider the past condition of the agriculturalist in the village, we can see how opulent he was, simply because of agricultural produce and protection of cows. Adhyaya Prakashika. As described in this chapter, Nanda Maharaj very gorgeously performed the birth ceremony for his newborn child. Then he went to Kamsa to pay taxes due and met his intimate friend, Vasudeva. There was a great jubilation all over Vrindavan due to Krishna's birth. Everyone was overwhelmed with joy. Therefore, the king of Braja, Nanda Maharaj, wanted to perform the birth ceremony for his child, and this he did. During this great festival, Nanda Maharaj gave in charity to all present whatever they desired. After the festival, Nanda Maharaj put the cowherd men in charge of protecting Gokula, and then he went to Mathura to pay official taxes to Kamsa. In Mathura, Nanda Maharaj met Vasudeva. Nanda Maharaj and Vasudeva were brothers, and Vasudeva praised Nanda Maharaj's good fortune because he knew that Krishna had accepted Nanda Maharaj as his father. When Vasudeva inquired from Nanda Maharaj about the welfare of the child, Nanda Maharaj informed him all about Vrindavan, and Vasudeva was very much satisfied by this. Although he expressed his grief because Devaki's many children had been killed by Kamsa, Nanda Maharaj consoled Vasudeva by saying that everything happens according to destiny, that one who knows this is not aggrieved. Expecting many disturbances in Gokula, Vasudeva then advised Nanda Maharaj not to wait in Mathura, but to return to Vrindavan as soon as possible. Thus Nanda Maharaj took leave of Vasudeva and returned to Vrindavan with the other cowherd men on their bullock carts. Shloka Anusharanam, verses 1 to 18. Sri Krishna's festive birth ceremony, 19-32, Nanda Maharaj's visit with Vasudeva, 1-18, Krishna's festive birth ceremony. Sukadeva Goswami said, Nanda Maharaj was naturally very magnanimous, and when Lord Krishna appeared as his son, he was overwhelmed by jubilation. Therefore, after bathing and purifying himself and dressing himself properly, he invited Brahmins who knew how to recite Vedic mantras. After having these qualified Brahmins recite auspicious Vedic hymns, He arranged to have the Vedic birth ceremony celebrated for his newborn child according to the rules and regulations. And he also arranged for the worship of the demigods and forefathers. So we can see is that now he wants to express his happiness at Krishna, you know, having Krishna as his son, right? So that devotional aspect. How does he do that? He has to have a medium. So how to express the birth of a child? Then there's the Vedic ceremony, right? The Brahmins are invited, the ceremonies are there, charity is given, prasad is being distributed. So then that's how you do it. Otherwise, then each person would come up with their own way. Does that make sense? So, and how somebody does something may or may not be appreciated, right? If somebody distributes prasad, everybody likes that. And if they decide that, wow, this is such a good day, and it really, you know, it really makes me happy, and you know, in that mood of me being happy, then on this day I'm going to cook something fabulous that I love for me and eat it alone. I will be so happy. So my happiness will be even more. Right? Would we consider that good? As a social thing, no. As the individual, great. But as a social thing, no. So that's the whole point. We want social. There's a definition how it does. Everybody's happy. Right? We don't follow it, then how many people are happy? Does that make sense? So that's why then the Vedic is used. So it's a medium for expression of the devotion. It's not. It's not an end in itself. Yeah. Okay. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandini.